So good morning. We're starting a bit late here, but welcome to June 9th Narcisse Bible Study. We have plenty of text to get through. We are looking at Numbers 11, verse 23 to chapter 12, verse 16. And that is going to be paired with Isaiah 50, verse 2, and Isaiah 59, verse 1. Verse 2 and following, and verse 1 and following. So I'll just write those on the board. Keep our fingers also active like we did last week. We began this section in Exodus 18 and Exodus 16 because there are very similar stories there, so similar that it makes you wonder if somehow a retelling or a remembrance of the same event, but never mind, it could also happen twice. Who are we looking for?
Abigail, she's got my bag, my Bible, my
Oh, yes, we do need that. You can't read our text for us without her,
no.
Unless you just read from my text.
We read a little bit.
If you remember from last week, the paragraph marker, we stopped at the end of verse 22, but it's kind of in the middle of the story, which is an interesting selection. So from verse 23, why don't you go ahead and read from mine? Verse 23 and maybe to the end of this chunk.
And the Lord said, Moses, is the Lord's hand shortened? Now you will see whether my word to you will come true. So Moses went out and told the people the words of the Lord. He then gathered 70 men of the elders of the people and had them stand around the tabernacle. And the Lord came down in the cloud and spoke to them, and he took some of the spirit that was on Moses and put it on the 70 elders. When the spirit rested on them, they prophesied. He did not do so again. How do I move it up a bit to keep going? Oh, yeah. No. Do you have to read this? How do I move the page up? So the two men remained in the camp, one named Eldad, and the other's name was Medad, and the spirit rested on them. Now they were among those in the spirit which had not gone to the tabernacle, so they prophesied in the camp. And the young man ran and told Moses, Eldad and Medad are prophesying in the camp. Joshua, son of Nun, the servant of Moses, one of his choice young men, said, My lord Moses, stop them. Moses said to him, Are you jealous for me? I wish that all the Lord's people were prophets, that the Lord would put his spirit on them. And Moses returned to the camp along with the elders of Israel. I think you go on from verse 31.
Now a wind went up from the Lord and drove the choir in from the sea. It brought them down all around the camp to about 3 feet above the ground, as far as the days walk in any direction. All that day and night, all the next day, the people went out to the baggage train. No one gathered less than 10 loads. Then they spread them out all around the camp. While the meat was still between their teeth, and before it could be consumed, the anger of the Lord burned against the people, and he struck them with a severe plague. Therefore, the place was named Kibroth Hattaavah, because they had been burned the people.
Okay. Do you have English there or Hebrew?
Hebrew and English now. I have a German line. I couldn't find
English. It's verse 1 of Numbers 12 if you have any English.
No.
Or maybe Nicole can find it. Numbers 12, verse 1.
And here again, I
oh, here.
Yeah?
Yes. Yeah, that's right. Is it? But it's more similar to German, the old English. There you go.
No?
Oh, Slicha. Teisha. Yeah. Okay. So we have a lot of artistry we have to kind of unravel and then re-ravel again. And then I think we'll go after that to the Isaiah passages. I've just put several things on the board. This is, again, we were halfway through the story last week, so this is a continuation. And I'm trying to do seder, trying to do order in my mind between this account and what we discussed last week, because there are similarities. And the mind so easily puts them together and makes something more artwork with it. But, so if you remember, they have the 70 elders and shoterim. So we talked about what is a shoter, some kind of enforcer of law or order, some officer. The 70 seems to be only elders, and then the shoterim, how many of them? I don't know, because it doesn't say. We talked about, is this the same category, different? It seems they're different. But you have this idea of coming to the Ohel Moed. And the Ohel Moed connects these two stories of Numbers 12. Both stories are about, involve prophecy. Who has the authority? And the authority seems to be connected to spirit and prophecy. And so that connects them. In both stories, the final say, God shows up at the Ohel Moed. So the people come to the Ohel, and something happens that confirms. In one, Moses is sharing. God takes, we talked about the word atzal. It's like God put a portion of spirit on Moses, of himself on Moses. And then here he takes away from that and puts it on the 70. So he's...
Lo,
kmo, כמו הצד. לקחת, אבל לקחת ממשהו שלם,
okay.
ואז לחלק. או לקחת במטרה לעשות משהו אחר. It's as if there's a set amount of spirit that's been apportioned, and so, hey, Moses, you don't want it all, I'll take from it and put it on the others. But the idea is, Moses is too much for him to bear alone, he needs help. However, in the Numbers passage, it seems that Moses is feeling the burden and complaining himself. In Exodus 18, you have a similar scenario, but there, it's actually Yitro that tells Moses, look, you need to not do everything yourself, it's too much for you. Sure, yes. Yes. So if you remember in chapter 18, let's just see, thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens. I forgot the tens. Good morning.
Good morning.
So in Exodus, the word used is sad, a minister, or some people translate here prince. It's some type of ruler. It tends to be a secular ruler, but in this case, not. And there's an order in Exodus where there's someone above 1,000, then another one above 100, another one 50, down to 10. And that way they're dealing with the different levels of problems, and then the biggest problems they take to Moses himself. So he sets up a structure and he delegates. And this is at the advice of his father-in-law, but his father-in-law says, if it seems to you good and if God wants it. Here, it seems to come from God where he says, hey Moses, pull out 70 and I'm going to do this. So the question is, how do these stories relate to each other? And that is not so clear. Maybe a connection could be the Shotrim or Sarim. Because in the text, it seems like these people already exist. There are already elders and there are already Shotrim. Shotrim, the officers.
You said something.
Maybe, the officers in Numbers 11 maybe could be the ministers in Exodus 18.
Okay. Cool.
And then.
So one is, in Exodus it's Sarim.
Yes.
Whereas in Numbers it's Shotrim.
Yeah.
Like a policeman.
Yeah. And in Numbers we're not told how many there are or what their divisions are.
Right.
We're told about the 70 elders.
Right.
So that seems to be something in addition or in parallel to the Shotrim.
I don't want to be naive, but why does it matter? Why are we struggling with it?
Okay, so what we're trying to figure out is, do these represent two different occasions and two different systems?
Right.
Or is it somehow the same occasion that has been told slightly differently? The other interesting factor is in Numbers. Okay, so this is our main text, Numbers 11 to 12, 16. In here, you have two things together. You have this issue of authority and prophecy. Who is Moses? Should he be doing it alone? And you have an issue of complaining of the people, and they want meat. So it's interesting because in Exodus 16, this is the story of also manna and quail, right? And between these two stories is quail. So the stories can be very similar, and in fact, I would say in most of our minds, some of the details blend together.
But in the Exodus story, there's nothing about prophecy or the spirit of prophecy and the whole issue of prophecy, which seems to me...
There's nothing, yes, except for one little word. When Yitro gives the advice to Moses, he says, Techezeh. You look for yourself. And he uses a word that it can be physical looking, but it can also be
spiritual.
A spiritual, like chazon is a vision, right?
Right.
So you can read, you can interpret that word to be discern spiritually who the right people are for this position.
Right.
And not just, so in that sense, maybe there's a prophetic connection there, but it's coming through Moses. Moses is the one that's supposed to discern these people.
Whereas when you get to Leviticus, there's the argument about who prophesies, and I wish you would all prophesy. And
no, that's right here. This is the story. You read it.
I know, that's what I'm saying, but that's not in Exodus. In Exodus, we're talking about spiritual discernment.
And there's no argument.
And there's no argument.
No one from the no one from the people is arguing against Moses' position and these Exodus stories.
Yeah.
Where here, who is the first to argue against Moses' position?
Miriam.
Okay, wait. Who is the first to argue about an issue of spiritual authority? No, I mean just in this section, in the section we read. It's kind of hidden in there. It's Yoshua, Joshua. What is his argument? What is his problem?
They're prophesying, these two guys.
Right. Right, so why is that a problem for him?
It's not the one that's supposed to be doing this, and there is a competition.
Yeah, there's like a competition. It's getting too much out of control for him.
Yeah.
Even though, theoretically, I mean, there's different ways to understand this. It could be that they were part of the 70 people that Moses chose, but maybe for some reason they were unclean, and so they didn't go to the Ohel Moed, but they were originally chosen, so the Spirit falls on them. But the fact that it's not according to what everyone else is doing, it's not the way Joshua sees it should be, you know, he says, stop them. And Moses says,
do we ever hear again about Eldad and Medad?
This is Eldad and Medad.
Do we ever hear again about, are they ever named again anywhere?
I don't think so.
They're both names which get used in Israeli society. I've got a friend called Medad. I mean, you know.
Sure. Yeah, they're a name. Yeah.
They're names. And I just wondered if
it's special to be named in the text. So here they are. And they're prophesying in the camp.
It makes sense what you said. They've not gone out to the tabernacle, yet they prophesy.
Yeah.
So it looks like, in some way, they were ceremonially unclean.
In some way, they're out of the system.
They're out of the system. Yeah.
They're not, like Moses told people to come to the tent, they didn't do it. For whatever reason, maybe it's justified.
Right.
But the fact that this is happening and it's not part of the, the expectations, that seems to be bothering Joshua. He's like, no, they should all be in our control, in our organized system. And then Moses' response is, no. I wish everyone would prophesy. I don't need to keep my authority. Like, I'm not bothered about my...
Doesn't that tie up with Paul, someone? Doesn't Paul
it seems say, to, yeah? Would that everybody speaks in tongues?
Would everybody speaks in tongues?
Absolutely. Like, it's not supposed to show status. So, then, okay, so that's talking about spiritual authority. And Moses is trying to say, I don't want to control people. I would that God gives everybody his spirit. It doesn't bother me. And then Miriam seems to initiate and Aaron joins her. I'm reading into the text here because the verb is Vatedaber Miriam beMoshe. Miriam spoke against Moshe and Aaron was added. So they have a complaint against Moses directly. So the first time it's Joshua that is dealing with spiritual authority, and then it's Aaron and Miriam. But the people aren't complaining at this point about Moses. So God immediately says, okay, come back to the tent of meeting. So both of these sections have the tent. And so they're standing there, and God shows up in a cloud. And here, I don't know if it says cloud, but it implies that the Spirit comes in a way that people can perceive. There you go. Yes, it is also a cloud.
And
they
were part of the 70s, but they got the spirit as well, but they were outside in the camp and didn't come.
Well, I think they were part of the 70.
Okay.
Unless you read that 70 were there and there were another two. You could read either way.
68 stopped prophesying, or they
no, they were prophesying too. It was a one-time occurrence. That's an interesting thing. No, they never went out. They stayed in the camp. Okay, so here's another. There's another confusing thing, and that is, what is this going out? What is going out? Because all through Numbers, where is the Ohel Moed? It's boom in the middle of the camp. So this is strange.
Every time I thought the going out was every time you picked up. Moved.
No, but when it says the 70 elders went out to the tent of meeting.
So where were they before they...
Why are they going out? Why aren't they going in? Like, why aren't they just going to the tent of meeting? It's in the center of the camp. But if you remember, we've talked in the past about this, there seems to be a tent on the outside and a tent on the inside. And there are some stories that make more sense in the outside tent.
Surely we see Moses in an outside tent praying or doing something, I can't remember, and then there's a movement in towards the actual tabernacle on the inside.
You mean the inner courts?
The inner court.
Yeah.
I can't remember where it is, but it's very, very clear that there's something, there's another place where he stays.
Okay, but look in verse 4. God says, go out, the three of you, to the tent of meeting. And the three of them went out.
I've got come out.
Yeah, see? Yeah. Okay.
Is that cheating in the English?
That is cheating. It says go out. Se'u means go. Go out. And so they stood at the entrance of the tent. And so then he comes down in the cloud and speaks to them. And it's this very dramatic thing when the cloud lifts and there is Miriam with leprosy. And then we have another dramatic, Aaron turns and looks at her and there she is with leprosy. So it's kind of like this big shock.
What verse is that again?
That one is further in 12. 10. Because it doesn't say Vayasar he'anan na'al ha'ohel. It says Ve he'anan sar na'al ha'ohel. Vehine Miriam metzura'at kashaleg. Vayifen Aharon el Miriam. Vehine metzura'at. So it's kind of very dramatic. And then Moses pleads for her. And you remember that part of the office of a Navi, of a prophet, is to bring God's word to the people and bring the people's word to God. You're supposed to, what do we call it?
Mediate.
And there's another word in English we use. Contend for, what? Intercession. Yeah, intercede for people. So Moses, you see his character, that he immediately is pleading for Miriam, even though Miriam was just speaking against him. So this shows Moses' incredible, both of these stories show Moses' incredible character. He's humble, he's not power-seeking, and he is so ready to intercede for people, even the people who have just gone against him. So this is an amazing person. But the other thing in this section is, what is Miriam's complaint? What does it say in verse 1 of chapter 12?
That Moses is my Ethiopian.
But it doesn't say what her complaint is, right? It says, because of the Cushite. And if they've translated Ethiopian, I'll give them 50%. But Cush is the country in Africa right under Egypt. It extends to include Ethiopia, which is then to the east, but it's basically Sudan from today. I just have to point that out because I grew up in Sudan. But why? Why is he... Okay, so there's two questions. Who is the wife we know of Moses?
Zipporah.
Where's Zipporah from?
Oh, from Midian.
Midian. Is Midian
Which
Cush?
Is the other side of the Gulf.
No. Right.
Cush is on that side.
So
my question is, how did the Cushite get to wherever they were?
Yeah, we don't have a good map, but let's say...
it's like, was she one of the foreigners that came out with them?
Well, this is totally out of proportion. But let's say...
we get the picture. We got it.
This...
Okay.
This is Saudi Arabia here.
I was going to say, those weren't connected.
They're not connected, but the bumps go close. This is Ethiopia. So if Egypt is here, Kush, this is... Sudan has now been divided, and Ethiopia and Somalia.
Yeah.
So if you're going to call all of this area Kush, right?
Yeah.
That means it includes the Horn of Africa. The Horn of Africa gets very close to Saudi Arabia. Where is Midian?
On this side of...
So here's little Israel up there.
Midian is down.
Midian begins under Moab. Okay, so there's Moab, there's Edom, and then there's Midian. And that includes, it kind of extends south into Arabia. So the whole south part. So it's possible there's a connection. Maybe they went by ship back and forth. I don't know. There could be a connection. And if you want to read it that way, then we're talking about the same woman, Zipporah, who they refer to as a Cushite. However, you can also say they're two different women.
Yes.
Because Zipporah is called a Midianite. And Cush is not Midian.
And this is the only place that it uses Cushi, and it uses it twice in this passage.
There is a passage in Habakkuk where it's Cushan. And if you want to take Cushan... is the name of a place in Habakkuk that is parallel to Midian. So it could be, some people claim when you say Cushi, they're talking about coming from Cushan, which is somehow in Midian. So then that is the interpretation that makes Zipporah the same as the Cushite. So the question here we're dealing with, is this the same woman that we know before to be Moses' wife, or a different woman?
But whether it's the same or whether it's different, we don't actually know what she's whinging on about.
Right, we don't know. Do you have a problem with the fact that he married this person? And why do you have a problem? So some people say, well, maybe it's because he married her without consulting the family, Miriam and Aharon. He just married her. And so again, it's this authority issue. Because look at number 2, verse 2. Because they said, has God only spoke through Moses? Hasn't he also spoken through us? So what is the connection between who Moses marries and whether God speaks to him or not? It seems strange, right?
I have no idea.
The other complicating factor is think back to chapter 18. What did we talk about there?
Authority.
Yitro comes to visit Moses. Who's he bringing with him?
Zipporah.
After
Moses had already sent her back.
After her... Yes. So we talked about this word, Shilucheha, that is typically used in the Bible for divorce. So, or permanent separation. I don't know how they differentiated exactly, but she and Moses had been separated for one reason or another, and now Yitro is coming back with her. And so it was just interesting, in both these passages, there's an issue of marriage and a woman who's not Israelite. So that's a connecting thing. They're a little different. And it could be, if this is a different woman here in Numbers, that he took a different wife after he divorced her. I don't know. Of course, then technically he wouldn't be allowed to take Zipporah back again, unless you just have two wives.
But he does take her back.
He does take her back.
Isn't that what we gather from 8? Exodus 18?
Apparently. It doesn't literally say that she stayed, but she came with the two sons, so the implication to me would be she came to stay.
Right.
And
but didn't have more children, but maybe she's too old to anyway.
Maybe. There are many details we're not given. The other interesting thing is, in traditional interpretation, the Cushite, they think, is a beautiful woman, because from
Song
Gematria, from Song of Songs and also Gematria, you can make the word Cushite and the word Yifat Mar'eh mean the same amount, the same numerical value. And therefore, this is, to call her a Cushite is code word for just beautiful. But then what's wrong with taking a beautiful woman? I don't know. So many mysteries here in some sense. But there are also parallels. And then you have Miriam getting punished for speaking against Moses in whatever she said. Whether it was a complaint of he shouldn't have married this woman or he should have consulted with me, it's somehow going against his character, maybe, and that's why.
Isn't this the sort of the same theme as touch not the Lord's anointed?
Maybe.
Like in Saul.
However, are you never meant to call people out? Like the prophet of the Lord went to David and said, look, you're that person. You committed adultery.
But
you know?
That may well be different. That's.
But David was
the
Lord's anointed.
That's a prophetic ministry of somebody going to the anointed one and saying, you've sinned.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas here, it's not clear at all what she's whinging about. It's something to do with power or authority or.
Right. The only thing that's clear is in verse 2 that she says, hasn't God also spoken through us? Which is true. So what she's saying is, why shouldn't we be equal to Moses? Maybe. I think to others, right? The implication would be to others. Because it says she spoke about Moses or against Moses. Vatedaber b'Moshe.
That's even worse.
Yeah. So in that sense.
Yes.
That would make it. So it's not so much whatever her complaint was, it's how she did it, that she didn't go directly to Moses if she has an issue. She started maybe spreading rumors.
Well, Nathan goes straight to David, doesn't mess around. He's not whinging,
yeah, right,
he's not whinging
right
about him in a corner and saying, tut, tut, tut,
yeah,
he didn't do quite the right thing.
Yeah. Which is what the proper thing to do would be.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's why, if you notice in verse 4, God says to them suddenly, hey, Moses, Aaron, Miriam, go out to the tent. So it could be Moses didn't even know what Miriam was saying, but God calls him out to the tent. And then they're shocked to find in the end that Miriam is covered in leprosy. And of course we have other stories. Uzziahu also tries to take a spiritual authority that wasn't given to him, and the result is leprosy. So
what was the other one you said?
Uzziahu.
Oh,
King
right.
Uzziahu. In the Chronicles, I think it's Chronicles, 1 Chronicles 26, is it? Yeah. Where he goes into the temple to offer incense, which is the priest's job. And the priest tried to stop him, like, no, 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 that's not for you to do. And he marches up there anyway, and leprosy breaks out on his forehead. They have to rush him out of the temple, and then they build him a palace to retire to outside of Jerusalem because he's now unclean for good. And some people have associated, if you go to Ramat Rachel, they think that might be the place. There is definitely a palace there anyway. Okay. So then key for, back to the connecting thing, to Isaiah 50, when Moses pleads for Miriam in verse 14, God gives the metaphor, if the father had spit on her, in her face, wouldn't she be humiliated? Halo tikalen. And so this word we're going to find again. So let's go now to Isaiah 50. Who would like to read some for us? You know what? We're supposed to start in verse 2, but just start in verse 1 because it talks about divorce.
Can I read it from, because I've got a Bible now.
Sure.
Where is the certificate of your mother's divorce? Whom I have put away? Or which of my creditors is it to whom I have sold you? For your iniquities you have sold yourselves, and for your transgressions your mother has been put away. Why, when I came, was there no man? Why, when I called, were there none to answer? My hand is shortened. Is my hand shortened at all that it cannot redeem? Or have I no power to deliver? Indeed, with my rebuke I dry up the sea. I make the rivers a wilderness. Their fish stink because there is no water and die of thirst. I clothe the heavens with blackness, and I make sackcloth their covering. The Lord God has given me the tongue of the learned, that I should know how to speak. A word in season to him who is weary. He awakens me morning by morning. He awakens my ear to hear as he learned. The Lord God has opened my ear, and I was not rebellious, nor did I turn away. Mm. I gave my back to those who struck me, and my cheeks to those who plucked out the beard. I did not hide my face from shame and spitting.
Okay.
For the Lord will help me, therefore I will not be disgraced. There must be a connection with this.
There's a lot, yeah, there's a lot of connections here.
I set my face like a flint, and I know that I will not be ashamed. He is near who justifies me. Who will contend with me? Let us stand together. Who is my adversary? Let him come near me. Surely the Lord God will help me. Who is he who will condemn me? Indeed, they will all grow old like a garment. The moth will eat them up. Who among you fears the Lord? Who obeys the voice of his servant? Who walks in darkness and has no light? Let him trust in the name of the Lord and rely upon his God. Look, all you who kindle a fire, who encircle yourselves with sparks, walk in the light of your fire and in the sparks you have kindled. This you shall have from my hand. You shall lie down in torment.
Yeah, okay. So, well, he kind of goes on. There is a lot of similar themes. What do we see that is similar?
Yeah.
So the first word, sefer kritut, the book of cutting off, that's a synonym to shiuheha, which is in Exodus 18. Not in the Numbers one. But then, parallel to that, he uses a verb. That I sent away. So, the interesting thing here, though, do you see what we just did? We connected these two by connecting these two. Right? Because in here, you don't have this word. Yeah. So, but yeah, so you have a context of divorce. What else do you have? You have this rotting fish, meat.
Before that, you've got your mother's been put away.
I've sent her away.
Is that just to do with divorce, or is that a link to Miriam being put out of the camp for her leprosy?
Well, you could say both, maybe, because leshaleach and legaresh are synonyms.
Yeah.
To send someone off, send them away.
Just cut them off, divorce.
So you could see somehow a link there as well. So there's a link of rotting meat. Here it's fish, here it is quail. What else? What does God say to the people in Isaiah 50? Look in verse 2.
same idea.
Yeah.
I mean, when I came, there was no, I mean, I sent it to Ezekiel. I there was no one to stand in the gap.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's.
It's a lack of faith too, right? Because they were.
Yeah, because he says.
Aren't you short to save you? Can I not provide?
Exactly.
Aren't you short? We read it here. I don't know if you remember. Here in Numbers, he talks to Moses, and he says, because Moses says to God, "Hey, where are you going to get all this meat from?"
Right.
And then God says, "Is my arm too short?"
Cows.
Yeah. So the exact same phrase, "Is my arm too short?" is used in both. And okay, so they're covered in sackcloth, but that's a little different. And then there's this, from verse 4 on, Isaiah seems to be justifying himself and his own ministry, right? Or whoever this speaker is. And he says, "The sovereign Lord has given me the capacity to be his spokesman." So, it's interesting, because he switches suddenly. First, it's God talking. "I'll put on the heavens, and I can do all this stuff." And then it moves directly from God's power to the speaker, the human speaker, saying, "God has given me a tongue of learning to know how to encourage the weak."
And I was not rebellious, nor did I turn away. I mean, is he justifying himself, or is he actually saying, "Lord, that's what you've given to me. You've given me the time of learning. You
right.
have stopped my rebellious spirit. I maybe wasn't trusting you."
Well, lo mariti, I didn't rebel. So when God told me this, I didn't go away from it. But here we have the people being punished because they rebelled.
Right.
So in Isaiah, he's saying, "I didn't rebel." So there's this rebellion connection. Who rebels, who doesn't rebel? And I would say there's a spiritual authority connection. Because in verse 4, he's saying, "God has given me this position. I'm not fighting for power myself. It's not just a power play on my part." And then you have, in verse 6, "I gave my back to the people beating me, and my cheeks to the ones, I don't know, ripping out my beard?" Or
there is a connection in here, and then also with Moses, where we read that he was more humble than anybody else or something.
Yeah, so there's humility.
Yeah.
Humility. And then there's the literal connection of two things together: klima, this humiliation, and rok, spit.
Mm-hmm.
So humiliation and spit. So rok, klimot, it's in plural. So both of those words in one way or another are also used here. If the father spits in the face, won't she be humiliated? Those words. And then also in verse 7, it uses that same word for humiliation. "But the sovereign Lord helps me, so I am not humiliated." So it's very, it's very interesting how there are so many words and themes condensed in this passage that people were able to think of as they read these words in Numbers. It reminded them of these words in Isaiah. Even though there's an artistic play back and forth, it's not that the same thing is happening in both cases, right? Here, the prophet is claiming, I did not rebel. I did not do it my own way. Here the rebellion is they did do it their own way and they were punished, or they reaped the consequences. So there's an artistic play, but it's many of the same threads and the same exact words.
Has the Isaiah chapter got a messianic?
Certainly sounds like it when...
I gave my back to those who struck me and my cheeks to those who plucked out the beard. Yeah. I did not hide my face from shame and spitting.
Insult and spitting, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This is a prophecy about Jesus.
Sure.
Hey, where did you walk in?
Now, I just want to say when we come to Isaiah, it can be two things. It can have a meaning for Isaiah's day,
yeah.
And it can also have a meaning for Jesus. I don't see that those are mutually exclusive.
No, sure not.
So
but it's interesting because
yes, it is.
So
and I wish Nick were here today because he's studying these passages in Isaiah.
So much of Isaiah, it's very easy to say, like our brother says, you know, it's Jesus, it's messianic, blah,
mm-hmm.
blah, blah, blah. But if you look at it as a whole, yeah, of course it's Yeshua, but at the same time, it's like a sort of beginning echo that begins all the way through.
Yeah.
You know, this is somebody who's going to come, somebody who's going to be spat on, who's going to be rejected, who's going to be whatever. And yet they're not going to, what does it say? I didn't hide my face. He didn't, you know, he went as a lamb to the slaughter. It's all
yeah.
sort of a pre-running.
And all of this is a call. Look at verse 10. Who among you fears the Lord? And if you remember, one of the qualifications to be a Sai here was the fear of the Lord and loving truth. And so here we say, who fears the Lord and who listens to the voice of his servant? So again, there's this idea of respect of God's authority. Yeah. And so if his spirit, I don't know, in this context it would be Moses, you have to respect that God has put Moses in his position. You have to fear the Lord. And then it's strange. Who walked in darkness and there's no light on him, let him trust in the name of the Lord and let him rely on his God. Isn't that interesting? It's not like, oh, because you've done the right thing and you trust and you haven't rebelled, you're just going to have light. No, you might be walking in darkness at the time and feel like God's far away, but that person should trust in the Lord. It's a very interesting little verse. I feel like we could go off and just study that one. But then look at verse 11. But like, you guys have kindled your own fire, so why don't you walk in the light of your own fire?
But that permission of the, like, Miriam, like, you know, you kindle fire with your tongue, so you read by yourself. Right?
Yeah. Oh, that's a nice connection, the tongue of fire.
Tongue of fire.
And you could go back to strange fire, where you have a similar situation of questioning the spiritual authority, and aren't we just like you? And fire is the judgment.
There's a psalm which talks about the fire of the tongue.
Yeah.
I can't remember where it is. And it's linked up, I think, with the broom tree, which is a tree that makes incredible. There's a long story about that. It doesn't matter, but it's the same link that this fire, it's the fire of the tongue.
And some people, okay, so you have this zikot in verse 11. My translation actually says, look, all of you who start a fire and who equip yourself with flaming arrows. So, zikot. The question is whether this is a torch or a flaming arrow. So that's interesting. The flaming arrows kind of lines up with the tongue and the speaking against you.
It's Psalm 120. What should be given to you? What should be done to you? You false tongue. Sharp arrows of the warrior with coals of the broom tree.
Yeah,
and the broom
okay.
tree and the rotte
mm-hmm.
is kindling wood that makes terrible
there you go.
Fires.
So you were in Psalm which?
120.
What verse?
3:4.
Okay. All right.
And it even goes on, it could be connection. Woe is me that I dwell in Meshech, wherever that is, that I dwell among the tents of Kedar,
mm-hmm.
my soul that has dwelt too long with one who hates peace.
You know where Kedar is, by the way, right?
Well, apart from just outside Mahaneh, we know.
Am I... If, wait, let me go. Let me check myself. Yeah. The desert to the east, southeast of Israel. Desert, east, southeast is Midian. So we have a nice Midian connection there too.
But also, verse 2, deliver my soul, O Lord, from lying lips and from a deceitful tongue.
Yes. Sone Shalom, the one who hates Shalom. And again, this is connecting me back to the list of qualifications in Exodus 18. So this is all a very artistic web we have going on here. In Exodus 18, if you look what Moses says, or sorry, his father-in-law says to him, in in chapter 18 of Exodus, verse 19, this is his advice. You teach them, and then you discern verse 21. People of valor, anshei ha'il, yir'e Elohim, fears of the God, anshei emet, son'e vatsa. So people of truth who hate bribes, and put them for these things. Okay, so I'm mixing in here the concept of peace as well, because earlier Jethro comes to Moses in peace, in contrast to Amalek who comes in war. Mm-hmm. And also, if you do this, you'll be able to stand, you'll be able to continue, and this people will come to his place in peace. So there's this connection of peace as well. We were just in, the scripture Gemma brought up from Psalm 120, there's a connection of peace there. And when you hate peace, it's when you do this Lashon Hara. Yeah. So you're kindling something. You're starting fires with your tongue when you should be silent, or you should love peace. Put out the fire. Okay, so now, we're out of time. Should we just read one verse in Isaiah 59? Because it was there for us, and the rest was so meaty we didn't get to it. And again, look, the Lord's hand is not too weak to deliver you, or literally not too short to deliver you. His ear is not too deaf to hear you. But your sinful acts have alienated you from your God. Your sins have caused him to reject you and not listen to your prayers. And then it goes, for your hands are stained with blood and your fingers with sin. Your lips speak lies. Your tongue utters malicious words. No one is concerned about justice. No one sets forth his case truthfully. So there is a connection in all these passages between rebellion and wrong talk. You're talking against God, you're complaining. You're talking against Moses, you're complaining. And it's those things that have consequences, that cut you off from God. The consequences here for people were a plague. They got their prayer request, but it came with a plague. Consequences for Miriam is leprosy. There is still redemption afterwards, but there was a consequence.
And go on, the consequence, I was thinking of another consequence, which was the whole thing about peace. The consequence of setting that fire is you've got war.
You have a lack of peace.
Your lack of peace is war.
So what is your connection over there?
So, I was kind of reading.
part, yeah.
But this salvation can, you know, affect
yeah.
who he is.
Yeah.
So it's like, who do you choose and who do you surround yourself with and who's your neighbor? I don't know. I thought that was very, because you will become who you're with. You will become your neighbor, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever outed you, whatever you're invested in you or not. So this is, I don't know, it's been, I'm thinking about it all week.
Yeah. And if you choose to gossip or slander or be deceitful, you are siding with the war and not the peace. Like, you are not helping peace.
Well, what we were thinking, Abigail and I were thinking about earlier, which connects with what, I don't know what her name is.
Karen.
Yeah, what Karen was saying, is that If you are part of the 70, if you're part of the leaders, you've got part of it, you also have to have a spiritual authority to really teach the others to come into some sort of authority. We were thinking of it in the context of yesterday's march in Tel Aviv and the believers who went down and stood against it, and how many of them don't have that real authority either above them or within them to know just what a demonic force they're dealing with.
It's interesting because the Isaiah passage, God gives him, when he puts him in authority, he gives them the tongue of learning,
right?
To encourage the tired.
That's right.
And so, and here, in Exodus 15, it mentions that Moses needs to teach these people God's way.
Yeah.
So there is this authority of teaching.
And
involved.
It's teaching, not just head. It's not just book learning or head learning. It's teaching by experience and having maturity in the spirit to know when you're in the spirit, when you're not in the spirit, so on.
Well, biblically, you think in your heart, and you will things. You decide things on a deep level.
Right.
In your heart. That is your mind, so to speak.
Right.
So there isn't this kind of separation of mind and this. It's together. Now, your playot maybe are more your deep emotions as
right.
well.
What does it say? Spirit of learning or a tongue of learning?
Well,
I like that very much.
Let's see. You can find it first, guys.
What was the question?
I think it's verse 5. Adonai patach li ozen vanochi lo marit yachor lo nesugoti. Is it 4? 4, yeah. Leshon limudin. The tongue of limudin. Teaching. Ladaat lauf. Laut, laut et yaef. Verse 4.
Of what?
Of Isaiah 50. God has given me the tongue of teaching to know how to encourage or sustain or help the one who is weary. And so I get a word awakens each morning by morning. So it's a nice, it's like God speaks to me just like he teaches me. So you're getting this new revelation every morning. And the goal of that is to help the weary. So there's a lot to chew on here, and our time is over. So Shabbat Shalom, and you can join the worship service downstairs, starting in a couple of minutes.